Welcome to The Sales Hustle, the only no BS podcast where we bring you the real, raw, uncut experiences from sales change makers across various industries. The only place where you can get what you're looking for to up your sales game. Today's episode is brought to you by SalesCast. SalesCast helps sales professionals transform the relationship building process and win their dream clients. I'm your host, Colin Mitchell. What is happening, sales hustlers? Welcome to another episode. I'm super pumped today. I've got Jeroen Korhout. He is the CEO and founder over at SalesFlare. So we're going to be talking about a very interesting topic today and something that I think a lot of you are probably interested to hear his thoughts on. So we're going to be talking about why CRMs don't work, and then we'll see where it goes from there. Jeroen, thanks so much for coming on today. Give us a little bit of background and just give us the short version of your sales story.
My story in sales, you mean?
Yeah.
First of all, super glad to be here. I'm Jeroen Korhout. My name is a bit funny to pronounce. It's Dutch. I'm Belgian.
How did I do? Did I do okay? Did I pass?
It was okay. I think you said Jeroen instead of Jeroen. By the way, it was fine.
Maybe we'll have you back another time and I'll nail it.
Super. My sales story, actually, I never thought I was going to be in sales, honestly. I was always on track to be an engineer. That's also what I studied. My first professional thing I did, you could say, work sort of, was building websites for people. Mm-hmm. I was 15, 16 or so, and then I started building some websites. It was really fun. I could create stuff. It was something I love to do, but also for people, which is also an aspect that is absolutely necessary for me, is to be able to do it for someone and work together with them. I then studied engineering with the idea that I was going to do some engineering job or maybe start my own web design company one day. Like a real serious one, not the thing when I was young. And when I was actually applying for engineering jobs after my studies, I noticed that I didn't like any of the jobs I was offered. I wanted to do something with people and not be in the back room creating something. And I wanted to be in front of people and doing something with them. So after a lot of frustrating interviews, one night before going out, my best friend lent me his credit card. I applied for business school with it. I didn't have a credit card at the time. And in the end, after going there, I got accepted, and I just had to convince my parents I was going to do another year, and it was going to cost some money, but I was going to pay it all back to them. I did that, and actually, that put me on a totally different track, because all of a sudden, I could go into marketing and sales. I studied biomedical engineering. So I went into the healthcare sector at first, mostly pharma. I started off as a marketing person in a pharma company called Baxter. What I was essentially doing was helping salespeople sell their stuff. So I would prepare materials for them and train them on how to use them mainly, and then also building some websites for doctors and for patients. Yeah,
So how do you think your marketing experience has helped your sales success? Because these days sellers aren't just selling. They got to have some marketing skills or knowledge or experience to really being a top producer.
Yeah, I think what marketing teaches you is to see the bigger picture. That's basically what we're trying to do in marketing, is scaling that sales, not just for one person, but for your customers as a whole. Maybe try to segment your group of customers to make sure that you can have a better message per group. While as a marketer, I think your sales experience teaches you how to still see the individuals how to have empathy with every single customer, how to create solutions for them. It's sort of the flip side, sort of the flip side of sales is marketing, and flip side of marketing is sales.
Yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of organizations that are trying to figure out how to get their sales and marketing teams, you know, on the same page and more aligned. So I've always found that, you know, sellers that understand the marketing side of the house, you know, do extremely well, and marketers, you know, that really take time to get to know sellers and their needs and what's going on that side of the house tend to do a much better job. So I'm always, you know, curious to learn more about people like yourself that kind of know, you know, both sides and how it's helped you.
Yeah. Funny thing, by the way, is when I went into marketing and pharma is when you go into marketing and pharma, the track you follow that everyone wants you to follow is to first go in sales and then in marketing. I skipped that. I didn't want to do that sales job. I was like, I'm not going to be in the waiting room of doctors. I hate that. Don't want to do it. And I found that one place where actually my boss, she came from finance into marketing, and she wanted to believe, like, I'm going to hire this engineering dude here, studied biomedical engineering, and he's going to do marketing. Normally, that would never have worked. So I just effectively skipped sales. But then actually my sales experience started after that, because that marketing job was so boring that I've only done it for, I think in the end, 10 months. I found another job at a marketing consultancy that actually helped pharma companies to adapt to the digital age, you could say. Pharma companies are sort of stuck in that sales model where they basically just send a lot of sales reps to doctors, and the more sales reps they send, the more sales they make. That was the formula for most of the past century in pharma. But then with the internet coming, first of all, doctors are super tired of seeing salespeople. Secondly, they can find everything on the internet, so why would they have to see a salesperson? So that all started shifting, and we helped companies to adapt to that. The salespeople, so the marketers in pharma that came from sales jobs, they didn't really have the necessary digital background. That's not really the forte of most salespeople, all this digital stuff and building websites and all that. So there was a huge gap for us to fill. So I was doing marketing consultancy and sales consultancy to a certain extent, and selling that as a salesperson. And that's actually where I gained most of the sales experience, was selling this consultancy to pharma companies, because I was essentially responsible for a series of pharmas. And I would find out what issues they had, where they were, where they wanted to go. I would then make a proposal on how to do it. I would make a budget, a project plan. I would make sure that internally we had the right people to execute it. Mm-hmm. I would manage the whole customer relationship, the delivery, you know, the whole thing, getting the invoices paid even.
Wow. Like full cycle on both ends. I'm sure that, you know, experience in itself has really kind of molded some of the things, you know, that have helped you with your current venture. So let's dig into this topic. I think the sales hustlers are anxious to hear what you have to say about something that I think probably a lot of them are, you know, thinking themselves, you know, why CRMs don't work.
Yeah. So during that experience, we actually worked a lot with Salesforce. In the company itself, we had Salesforce. But we also used it in a lot of projects with customers. Imagine the pharma world at that point. They were coming from some really old system that Oracle was selling called Siebel. So they were very excited to get on something new like Salesforce that at least looked like it was from the 21st century.
Yeah.
But the thing was, as we were rolling it out and as we were using it ourselves, I always noticed that it didn't get the amount of usage that people always said it would get. It wasn't actually used as a sales tool. In most cases, it became a reporting tool towards management, which then immediately made it dysfunctional. Because the thing was, salespeople had to do an enormous amount of data input, which in many cases was not super easy, very slow. So they weren't really interested in doing that. Plus, on the other end of the equation, they didn't get the whole lot back from that. So it's not like if they then filled it out, it was easy for them to follow up their sales. Like it didn't really help them with doing that. And on top of that, their manager would basically start looking at what they were doing, which they didn't really like too much either. So the combination of all these things made that salespeople just put the essence in there. Like you basically fill your pipeline so that they see you're doing some work. If they require you to log some calls, you log some calls. If they want you to put people on their newsletter, you do that as well. But you're not going to fill out diligently all the things you discussed and when you were in touch with people and new people that you met at the company or that you were selling to, whatever. All the level of detail that you need to actually be successful with CRM, to follow up your sales better and on all the things sales managers want to do, that never got in there. And I honestly never understood that. And at some point I started thinking it was sort of the way the world was or something.
Yeah.
It couldn't be solved. Like,
was it just some of your own frustration out of things that you had used and seen over time?
Yeah, my frustration was mostly that, for instance, I was using these modern to-do list apps, like Wunderlist at the time. And then I was using Salesforce, and the two things seemed so different that I didn't understand how that was possible, because both were software companies, the one for consumers, of course, and the other one for enterprises. But so weird that just the to-do app could have such a different usability in both systems.
So, so what I hear you saying is kind of less is more, like keeping it simple. People are more willing to actually use it and have a better experience when it's more simple, straightforward, and really just focuses on the core needs that they have.
That's definitely part of it. I think first of all, salespeople need to have something that they can easily work with. They need to understand it. It doesn't need to be too much work to manage it. Like the amount of time they spend managing the software should be very limited. But plus also the whole expectation that comes with the software, where they say like, okay, now you're going to fill this out with all these tiny details throughout all your sales work, and you're going to spend an enormous amount of time on that, and you need to always remember to put every little thing in the CRM. I don't think that is realistic. And actually, when we were doing customer interviews about 7 years ago, when starting Salesflare, I often asked about this, so companies would say like, yes, our CRM is not used to the fullest. And then I was like, okay, and how can we fix that? And what they would say was, well, this is the thing, salespeople are lazy, they just need to fill it out, and if they do that, then everything is solved.
Mm.
But I don't think that you can expect that. It's not because somebody decided that it should work that way, that it's also the way it should work.
Yeah. And so I'm just curious to find out did you get feedback from other salespeople, or was a lot of this just your own experiences of, you know, sort of coming to this conclusion of what matters most, you know, in a CRM?
No, I think most of it was a public secret fact that the software was too cumbersome. The fact that you had to do a lot of data inputs, that you didn't get a whole lot of value for it to return, and that it was more of a tool for managers than for salespeople. Everybody knew that, but nobody was thinking it could be changed. And what we actually saw then is that a part of the issue there is the data input, and that it doesn't have to be an issue, that actually you can get that information from other places. You just have to pull it together from your emails, your calendar, your phone, from social media, company databases, email tracking, website tracking. And if you take the data that is already in all these places together, then you have the data you need in the CRM, and you don't need to spend your day copying all that information. Computers can do that work in a much better way for you.
Yeah, it's more consistent, it's more reliable. You know, sales managers are happy, right? Because they don't have to rely on humans to input the data that they're, you know, constantly, you know, beating on the drum of, you know, why people are not, you know, utilizing these fancy, very expensive tools that they're paying a ton of money for. And so what you're saying is, like, you've really just simplified it and you know, kind of solved this problem. Why has nobody else done this, or, you know, why had they not done it before?
I think two reasons. One is that the prevailing notion is that it's just the salespeople that are lazy and the software is good enough, and, you know, that's the way it is. And then secondly, for existing CRM systems, it's very hard to build something fully automated from something that is manual. It's easier, like we did from the ground up. If you start building something and your premise is okay, this is going to be an automated system which still allows manual data input. That is much easier to build than if you already have a manual system that you would want to then make fully automated.
Got it. Okay, and so, what's some of the feedback that you guys are getting now from people using the platform?
We get all kinds of feedback, positive feedback, negative feedback, overwhelmingly positive, I would say. We actually, if you look at our metrics, for instance, I heard once from a Salesforce executive that only 20% of the licenses they sell are actually used. In our case, I think we're currently at about 90% usage on licenses, so, like active usage.
Wow. How does that compare to other CRMs?
Yeah, I don't know data from other small business CRMs, for instance, but in the case of Salesforce, it's more around 20%, like I said. That's what I heard, at least.
Wow. Okay, so that's a pretty big difference.
That is a big difference. I don't know. There's a lot of possibility in still in many companies to fix the current setup. Maybe I can give a few tips there, which are not at all related to getting software or something. Because what I see in many companies is that they don't really make a thoughtful selection when it comes to CRM, and they don't implement it. And it's actually don't implement it in the right way. And it's actually really simple. It's actually there's three main things which you need to think about, and it will already set you apart from 99% of the other companies. First, don't just type CRM into Google. You will not end up with the right CRM, I assure you. I know that's what most companies do, like the best CRM for small businesses.
I'm always surprised how many people that I come across occasionally, they like don't even have a CRM at all.
Yeah.
It's mind blowing. How long sometimes people wait to actually get a CRM.
Yeah, maybe as a step number zero then, how do you know that you need a CRM? I think when you notice that you have somewhere above like 10, 20 leads or customers at any point in your pipeline, it starts becoming more difficult to manage that. You can start off with a sheet, of course, but this is very quickly going to become difficult, because a sheet, it can have some information about your customer and you can have the status in there. But as soon as you want to have some idea of the timeline, this is something that is extremely difficult to keep in a sheet, and it's very manual. You'll find the same issue with a sheet as in a CRM that doesn't really help you with the data input, is that at some point, nothing is up to date anymore, and you sort of lose the overview there. I think if you start scaling around 20 deals or so at any point, or 20 relationships, you need to follow up. Then you need a CRM. And also, another point that at which a lot of companies get a CRM is when they start working together with each other. If you are sharing communication with a certain customer or so, then it also makes sense to go for one.
Right, right. Okay. Okay, so then back to step one, right? Don't just Google CRM.
Yeah, don't just Google CRM. First, figure out why do you need one. It seems a simple thing, but is it because you want to follow up your sales better? Is it because you have you want to manage your relationships, and as a real estate person, you know, you want to keep relationships, and at some point you'll sell something? Or is it because you have an e-commerce shop and you want to get repeat sales? Or is it because you're a coach and you want to get people to get at some point, after a lot of content from you, buy a course? And these are all wildly different software systems that you need for these purposes. So that's step number one. When you know that, the subset of CRMs will already become way smaller. Like if you go on G2.com, for instance, there's 650 plus CRMs. If you know that it's one of these things, you'll have a much smaller set. Then look through those to see which ones might fit you best. Some of them are for enterprises, some of them are for small businesses. Those are also wildly different systems. Don't get an enterprise CRM if you're a small business, and the other way around. It won't work out well.
Yeah. How about people that are maybe like thinking ahead, you know, hey, maybe this is like, how far ahead should be, you know, because migrating systems is a huge pain, right? So, you know, how far ahead do you think people should be thinking as far as like, okay, here's my needs today and here's what I need, but here's, you know, the sort of growth that maybe we're anticipating, and here's where we might be in 1, 2, or 5 years. And is this going to still suit our needs, or are we going to have to deal with a really, you know, pain in the neck migration?
Yeah, I think this very much depends on the size and speed of your company. If you're in a very large company and you're going to get an enterprise CRM, you're probably looking at horizons of somewhere 6 to 10 years or so, and then you better buy something that can grow with you for a while. Otherwise, it's going to be a horrible experience, and you'll constantly have consultants building stuff and shipping data from one place to the other.
Right.
If you're a small business and you are the type of business that can make decisions pretty quickly, then you can switch CRMs in the matter of days or weeks, some months. It depends on how big you're starting to become. Small business CRMs are much, much easier to go from the one to the other. You can just take your data, export it, import it in the other one, and you'll be up and running. So
yeah.
Depends on your company.
Yeah. Now, what about, you know, you know, talking through that just kind of made me think of another thing, which is, you know, how do you know, like, which CRM, you know, so we're talking about growing out of a CRM, right? And kind of making the right choice. But how do you pick the right CRM that's also not going to hinder growth as well?
And why do you think it would hinder growth? What would be the reason?
Well, I mean, like, you know, just having a good idea of what your needs are and what are going to make, you know, things easier for your sellers to hit those growth benchmarks that you're looking for.
Well, I think that's where step two comes into play. So step one was knowing why you need a CRM, and then sort of making the set of serums smaller so that you focus much better on the right ones for you. Then when you have a list that you want to try, involve your sales team. This has two big advantages. One, if your salespeople test it and see that they like one more than the other, you know in the end that they are way more likely to use it. And it's obvious. Plus the fact that you've involved them in the process makes that the buy-in also will be much higher. So it's not you imposing a CRM on them at some point. It's you finding a CRM together. It's a much better outcome in the end.
I think that's a fantastic tip. And I think unfortunately that's one that I think a lot of people might skip or not consider, like actually involving their sales team in the buying process of the CRM, which makes a tremendous amount of sense because one, they're the ones that can really test it to say, hey, is this going to fit all our needs? Is this going to make your job easier? Is this going to, you know, is this what is going to work based on our needs? And if they feel that they're part of that decision, then you're absolutely right. They're going to have, you know, much more buy-in and significantly higher user adoption should they go with any particular CRM that they were involved in making the decision.
Yeah, definitely. We help many hundreds of companies each month to get onto a CRM. I can tell you that the amount that actually involved their salespeople is a very, very small subset. And when I talk to such a person, I always congratulate them on the fact that they do it. Because I personally think it's the only way that you can be really successful at implementing your CRM, making sure that salespeople use it. Because in the end, that's going to be the absolute bottleneck. If the sales team doesn't use it, you can pray for having great forecasts, knowing who they're in touch with, being able to replace someone who left or who is sick, collaborating between the marketing and the sales department in a better way. Collaborating within the sales team, even on the customers, this is all going to be impossible because the data you need to do that is not in the system at that point.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think my guess was right there that not very many people do include their sales team based on what you're saying. Why do you think that is? Why do you think so many sales leaders or CEOs, founders, CROs, whoever it is that is, you know, making the decision on these CRMs aren't including their sales team? Like, what are the things that you're hearing? Why are they not doing that?
I think it's one, shortcuts, wanting to move faster, thinking that it's going to slow down everything and just saying, we'll just move ahead. It might make your selection quicker, but in the end, it's going to take longer until you get the CRM working because the one you choose has a much higher probability of failing. So I'd say take a bit extra time, involve your salespeople. In some cases, it might be culture as well, where the head of sales or so is the one who decides everything. That might be another aspect, but I think in most cases, it's the first thing.
Got it. Okay. All right. So talk us through what's step three?
Yeah, three. And also, it's going to seem obvious again, but step three, when you train your sales team, training already is good. Many companies just throw them in and say, use it. The bit more systematic companies will train their sales team on how the CRM works, which is nice. That's definitely the basics, because if your salespeople know all the features, how they work, they can get the most out of it. But what almost all companies forget is to discuss within their team how they're going to use it together. And that is pretty essential because a CRM can be used in many different ways. You can, for instance, interpret the stages in the pipeline in different ways. You can fill in the fields in different ways. You can put notes in this place or in that place. And if you don't agree together on how you're going to do these kind of things, then a lot of things become impossible. First of all, the sort of communication aspect of the thing becomes very fuzzy because everybody has their gives a different meaning to everything.
Right.
Getting insights from the data is super difficult. Pulling a list of contacts, who this and that, is also super difficult because all that information might have different forms. So it's a really simple thing, and it doesn't take more than an hour, maybe 2 hours of discussion, which you write down in a document. But once you have these guidelines, you will be so much more successful at using the CRM as a team than if you just train your salespeople. Okay, this is what it does. Go.
Yeah, I mean, even just, you know, so I mean, what I hear you're saying is like, it seems like such a simple thing, like be collaborative in how we're gonna, you know, here's our options of how to do these different things that we need to do. Here's, you know, how we, you know, suggest everybody does it, and here's how we can better work together. But even just agreeing on like the needed customizations or workflows or automations and things like that, you know, where if A happens, it goes to B, and, you know, different people might have a little bit of a different idea of how that should work. So rather than just trying to, you know, be the type that, you know, is not involving your sales team and making a quick decision and then thinking that, you know, maybe one or two people have all of the answers of here's how, you know, we want people using it and here's how it should work, but being more collaborative in one, from the decision-making process through the training of not just the basics, but how they can work together, you know, what things are needed, workflows, automations, customizations, all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You nailed it. And I guarantee you that it's probably not even 1% of the companies who do all these things correctly.
Wow. And they seem like such simple concepts, right? Like, these are not, you know, these are not, you know, big lofty ideas. Like they seem like really simple ABC, you know, steps here. And it's mind boggling why, you know, more sales leaders or head of sales are not following these steps when implementing a new tool. And this applies to anything that they're using in sales, CRM or whatever, right? Any software, basically, if they followed these steps, probably would have a lot more, you know, user adoption, get a better ROI off of the tools, all of those things that they're kind of hoping for when, you know, signing up for something like that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the collaboration aspect and being a bit more systematic and thoughtful about things, it makes such a big difference in your success in the end.
Yeah. Yaron, thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. Any final thoughts? Do you want to tell the sales hustlers where they can find out more about you or find out more about SalesFlare or anything else that you want to let them know?
Yeah. So actually, a small point about SalesFlare. I didn't really say what we do. So we offer a sales CRM to small and medium-sized businesses who sell B2B. It's mostly used for following up leads. That's if I ask most of our customers, what do you do with SalesFlare? They say, we follow up our leads better. It's mostly agencies on our software, like marketing agencies and software development companies, but also a lot of tech startups, which involve a lot of SaaS companies all over the world. And what our system does different from HubSpot, for instance, is that it's built from the ground up to be an automated system that then still allows manual data input and stuff. It's very easy to use, which makes that it's. I think if you go look on G2, we have the highest ROI of all the 650 CRMs out there. If you want to read more about that, salesflare.com is the right place. Flare is FLARE. You can even try the software without creating an account if you just click try it free or something like it says at the top. And if you want to get in touch with me, LinkedIn is the best place. You just type my name in there. There's only one person with my exact name. You can send me a connection request, but don't forget a personal message. With the amount of spam I'm sure you all get every day, I personally ignore every message that doesn't have a personal message attached. But if you write a personal message, I'll certainly connect with you and we can have a chat.
Awesome. Thanks so much again for coming on. We'll include those links there in the show notes for you, Sales Hustlers. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please, please write us a review, share the show with your friends. And as always, we're listening for your feedback.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Sales Hustle. Are you a sales professional looking to take your sales career to the next level? If the answer is yes, then I want you to go over to salescast.co. Check us out, and if you feel that you are ready, set up a time to talk with me and my co-founder, Chris. I'm your host, Colin Mitchell, and if you enjoyed this episode, feel free to leave us a review and share the podcast with your friends.